This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink, inspiring public curiosity about food. Learn more at MOFAD.org.
I'm HRN's Communications Director, Kat Johnson, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. This week, we're celebrating Valentine's Day. Whether it's your favorite day of the season or you avoid it like the plague, there's no debating, it's a big day for the world of food and hospitality.
Valentine's Day is what we refer to in the industry as a blackout day.
I don't feel that my manlyhood is threatened when I order a glass of rosé or, God forbid, a rosé champagne.
It's an old Jamaican drink from way back, and we just decided to bring it back into existence. A drink that the men, they believe it really does wonders.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Allie Kane. Welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building growing consumer brands. When we launched a line of fresh sauces, I knew we were jumping into something crazy. Haven's Kitchen is a cooking school, cafe, and event space. A product that people buy in grocery stores is an entirely new business, and I had a lot to learn. So, in my efforts to get myself educated, I started meeting everyone I know and respect who could advise me on production and distribution, sales and legal, PR, and social media. Then I started having those conversations here as a podcast so that other entrepreneurs can learn from them as well. This is the story of Haven's Kitchen Sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Homa Dashtaki, founder of the amazing White Mustache Yogurt. If you haven't tried it yet, run, do not walk, to go get this yogurt. It's smooth and glossy and thick and tangy, and it's genuinely unlike any other yogurt I've ever had. Try the date flavor. That's my favorite. Trust me. Hi, Homa.
Hi, Allie.
I'm so glad you're here. I haven't seen you since the baby was born.
I know.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So you said
Thank
she's
you.
7 months now.
7 months, yeah.
And how's it going?
It's unreal. It's totally.
Is she like sitting up like a little blob?
Yeah, she's sitting up like a blob.
That's my favorite.
She's already starting to manipulate us, which is awesome. I'm so proud of her.
She's a strong little girl.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
The girls are good at that.
I'm like, I can't wait to just see her grow up.
I know.
But it's like totally turned my whole world upside down.
I can imagine.
Right. Yeah. And like in the most cliche way, and well, I don't even know how to talk about it. It's really, it's actually a problem.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get to that.
No.
But we're going to back up a little bit.
Sure.
Because I think the reason I'm always excited about every guest, but I think I'm especially excited about you because a lot of what we end up talking about, whether it's like legal or supply chain or branding or whatever, is that the base of all of this has to be a killer product. It has to be a great product. All of this is moot if you don't have a great product. That's not to say that you can't start off with something and refine it and get better, but you have to have something great. And the thing about White Mustache is it's just, it's great. Like it's been, I think I was an early adopter.
I mean, an early
New York adopter for sure.
Yeah.
And it's just special. You know, it's like a little miracle in a cup.
But
it really is.
Thank you.
Or a glass, I guess.
I think I don't take any credit for the product, except for the fact that, like, I am true to the art of yogurt making.
Yep.
And that's been the one thing I've been super staunch and stubborn about.
Yep.
And I have made every single mistake in the book with regard to packaging, labels, branding, legal, every mistake I've made. And the only reason I'm still standing is
because your product is so awesome.
Yeah. And, like, again, like, I will stay true to that product, even, you know, even if it's counterintuitive to even me, you know.
But that's so perfect. Wow. You know what I mean? Because this whole podcast, my whole life right now, I call it CPG school. Like I want to learn every single thing I can about every possible step along the chain. And all of those things you can mess up on. Totally. Because you can figure it out. You know, you might have some pain, mm-hmm. but you can figure it out. But if you don't have the fundamental awesomeness right. that you have, it's going to be a lot harder. Right.
Okay. Well, and I think that can be in any product. And I think sometimes people lose sight of that because legal and profits right. and margins and all these things are so overwhelming. Yeah. It actually is so overwhelming that yeah. you could just let the product slide. And I think that's really not necessary.
I think it's also shifting, but we can talk about right. that too. Okay, I want to go back. So 1984.
Yeah.
How old were you? And you emigrated here.
I actually immigrated here in 86.
In 86, okay.
Yeah, and I was 7 years old.
Okay, and do you remember it vividly?
Yeah, I do. I was born on the day of that the Ayatollah came back to Iran and triggered the 1979 revolution.
Because of you?
As a result, I've become a very self-centered person. But my whole childhood was kind of under a fog of revolution right. and then the Iran-Iraq war, and we left in 86, which was in the middle of that, and resettled into a very quaint town of Orange County in Garden Grove, Orange County, where there was a huge Zoroastrian community, which is a tribe my family belongs to.
Right. So, and how do you know how that ended up being where the Zoroastrian
How that happened. I remember the first temple was in a small house in a suburban area, and we just congregated all together. Wow. And you just kind of all end up in the same place right. because you're just a community. And now there's a huge Zoroastrian community out there.
Very cool. And so silly question, but was yogurt a part of that experience? I mean, was yogurt just always a part of your life and always
it was always
culture?
A part of my life in the same sense that it was just all rice is a part of our like it was just right. taken for granted. It was yep. always there, but I don't attach any sort of sentimentality right. to it because I took it for granted.
Yeah, it was just a basic
right.
thing in yeah. your...
And I think it was only when I lost sight of it and then reconnected with it that I truly understood how special it was.
Yeah. When did you want to be when you were... you got to America.
Yeah, I got to America at 7.
Yep.
When I was 9, I wanted to be an attorney. And the reason I wanted to be an attorney is I just had come from so much chaos.
Yeah.
And the thought that you could put your expectations down in a contract and everyone would kind of try to yeah. abide by it.
Order.
And it was awesome.
Yeah. It's like Marie Kondo.
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah.
Right. You wanted to tidy up the world.
Right.
But, there's no tidying up
there's
the world.
There's no tidying it right. up. Yeah. We're all hoarders.
Now we all know that that whole thing is a fallacy. Totally. You might have a clean house, right. but your life is not going right. to be okay.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, and I gave it a go. I became a lawyer for a good 5 years. So
yes, and so were you a kid who loved school? Did you what were your subjects? Were you super dug in, or were you kind of always a little bit?
Yeah, that's a fair question. I think I was so just clenched fisted, determined to be this idea of what success was in America, that mm-hmm. I was just good at school.
Yeah.
I was good at getting A's. I was good at getting extra credit. Yeah. I was good at negotiating for whatever I needed to negotiate to yeah. get into AP classes, and then a mm-hmm. good college, and then a scholarship. And then I just became so hungry right. for that. And it wasn't even instilled in me by my parents, because by sixth grade, they were what's going on here?
Right.
This is too much. And they didn't understand the system, but I was just so driven. And I don't know. I have no idea where that comes from. Mm-hmm.
I think on some level, it probably comes from an early childhood of instability to some extent of chaos and insecurity. And you knew that at least you would have,
right.
Something to fall back on, yeah. or
and also a little bit of guilt. I mm-hmm. felt so guilty that we had gotten out
yeah.
and we had all this access to education.
Yeah.
And so many of my cousins and other friends from school, not that they're living bad lives or anything. Right. They're living their best lives and they're very happy and they almost feel sorry for me because I'm working so much.
Yeah.
And so it's like totally legit.
But that makes sense.
But that was like a part of it too.
Yeah. Okay. So you became a lawyer. You were like wearing a power suit. Mm-hmm. You were living the life you always wanted. Were you happy?
I don't know. I just was like
doing it.
I checked off the boxes, you know, and I was just doing it. I think, in, you know, it's hard to say if I was happy or not. But when I lost that law job, I didn't want to go back.
Yeah.
Not even a little bit.
You said something like that. I listened to another podcast that you were on and you said something like that you never would have left. And I often say that about my marriage, mm-hmm. that I would never have ended it. But once it was ended against my will, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I don't mean that in a negative way about him in any way, but I think sometimes if you're not living super consciously, the universe will kick you into consciousness.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what happened to you. Mm-hmm. So you lost your law job.
Yeah.
And then you just decided to go make yogurt.
No, I mean, that's a really intuitive insight to like getting kicked out because I had no direction. I had nothing that really spoke to me.
Yeah.
And so I didn't go back to law, but I also didn't have anything to go to. So like the next couple of years were just spent floundering and
or figuring it out, depending on how you frame it.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I went to an avocado farm for 3 months. I just sat there. I chain smoked. I then decided to do yoga, like real, you know, sequential here. And I taught yoga for a good year and a half. And I was like a terrible yoga teacher. Like
I know, because you're not
soft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you are in your own way.
Right.
I just...
Yeah, I would yell at the students. Yeah. I'd be like, you're not trying enough. Right. I can see it. Like, you know, and it was, you know, on some people like that kind
they
of
like
thing,
that.
They love it, you know. It's like you have like your nice therapist and then you're like,
get
therapist
your shit
spanks
together.
You. And I was like your mean yoga teacher. And I was like, hey, this isn't for me. And then I actually looked to get back into law. I was like, maybe I'd go into some sort of human rights thing. And because I like was always... drawn to finance, I started doing a lot of microfinance work in Africa.
Oh, cool.
And I worked for the International Monetary Fund for like 3 months. And I was like, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah.
Then the African Development Bank in Tunisia. And also like just didn't speak to me.
Yeah, because I don't think you're really in it when you're in those jobs. You get almost more further removed now that you're working there, ironically.
Yeah. But like all those things really informed me on like economies and society and community and survival. And then I thought I'd become a lawyer and like figure some way, some place for me.
Right.
And while I was doing that... you know, living in California, living with my parents at like 30 years old, 33 years old. It was, you know, I was like, I hope I get my shit together at some point. But, and yogurt found me completely by accident, just completely, completely by, and it was always this thing that was there.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, whenever you're ready, just show up. And I, you know, I joke about this a lot, but it's really true. Like I've tried to quit a few times.
Yeah.
Like it's just hard work and it takes so much sacrifice.
Yes.
And there is absolutely nothing that would make me quit. Like it's just too, it's too, like it's hit a chord and I feel like this is something I'd always seen other people have and never thought like I would get it. And it was like when lightning strikes, you don't quit, you know?
So I know that you and your dad started making it together.
Mm-hmm.
And, but what was like, was there a conversation? We're making this for ourselves. We're making it as a bit of a therapeutic process. He had a loss. You were trying to find yourself.
Mm-hmm.
This was something that you could connect back to. And it made you feel that security. But was there a conversation ever like, okay, now we're going to actually put this in a package and sell it to other people?
So the conversation was never about yogurt. It was always about an activity. Uh-huh. So we were like, we want to go to a farmer's market and have something to do. And we want to hang out on Saturdays. And my dad drives me crazy, but this is something we can do together. And yogurt was literally just the easiest thing that was right. available. Like I said, it was just always there. And once we started going to markets and people would try it and they'd be like, yeah. oh, what is this? Yeah. I'm like, it's yogurt. And they're like, we've never had this before. Yeah. And I was like, that's when the yeah. light bulb came on that it was
what
something.
Did it look like at the first? Did it look like the same thing that it looks like now?
No.
What did it look like?
It's gone through so many iterations. But like we just put it in a regular, like it was just a glass jar that was available through some like local mayonnaise distributor. It was like mm-hmm. in a mayonnaise jar. And we just sold it at like, and
did
we
it
had
have
three
the fruit?
Flavors.
Yeah.
No fruit on the flavor happened once I moved to New York.
Okay. What were the flavors of the yogurt?
It was Persian yogurt, which is not strained. Then Greek yogurt, which mm-hmm. is strained. Then it was a Yalda flavor, which is a mint walnut mm-hmm. raisin one.
Yeah.
And then there's the Kiss yogurt, which was an orange blossom yep. honey with walnuts. And then there was our savory shallot.
Right.
And that was it.
Wow.
And we made 8 gallons a week. Uh-huh. Like, we just literally no plans to turn it into a business. Like,
meanwhile, you had no plans to turn it into a business, but it was actually becoming a business because you went from one farmer's market to 3 farmer's markets. Right.
And like by the end of it, by the end of our run in California, we were making, you know, like $300 a day, which isn't much, but yeah. it was like
right.
for kind of like what felt like a
hobby.
Yeah. And like slowly starting to realize that this could be a thing.
Right.
And it really didn't turn into a business until California shut us down.
Yes. Which is what I was going to ask you about. So I read that Economist mm-hmm. piece. I really think I tasted it like the minute that you got here, and I don't know where I got it, but I feel like mm-hmm. I was meant to have your yogurt. But I think the minute that I tasted it, I read about it, someone must have tattled on you, or I don't, something happened because right. the Department of Agriculture doesn't usually find a little tiny stand at a farmer's market and like threaten it with like massive
right.
legal retaliation. Right. So you got a call.
Yep. So we were at the Laguna Beach Farmers Market, which is like the market, you know, like is like the holy grail of farmers.
It's like Erewhon.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You're like, all right. And so we got there and we're selling at that market by like 10 a.m. We're almost sold through our supply. And I get this phone call from the Department of Agriculture mm-hmm. being like, if you don't shut down, we're going to fine you $10,000 or you're in jail. And My sister is like convinced it was like the olive lady right. who like called in on us because she was jealous. And I just like I have my conspiracy theories, too. But it wasn't a joke. And That's we got crazy. Shut down. And I remember when they shut us down, and I say this every time because this is the reason why I got into business. Like the person who shut us down made sure to let me know that like she shut down a Mexican family for making cheese. They shut down a Vietnamese family for making milkshakes.
Right.
And I was like, man, you're proud of this? Like,
yeah.
There's so much food that we're missing out on yeah. because these rules are antiquated. Or,
totally. I was just talking to someone, this is a bit of a non sequitur, but a really lovely Haitian man. And he was saying that, you know, they used to have these incredible economies in Haiti until the United States had all this surplus agriculture, which we started selling to them for really cheap right. and making sure that like their local agriculture basically was like stifled. But what ended up, aside from sort of the economics of it, what ended up happening was that the people started mistrusting their own food because somehow this other food right. from America was cleaner and safer and sanitized. And that happens, you know, here too. I have friends who grow eggs on their farms and don't eat them because they're scared that those eggs are not as good as the right. eggs that they get from the grocery store.
Right.
Like we've been really sort of trained.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, unfortunately, it does sort of disproportionately, I guess, affect,
right.
Foods from different cultures who are, you know,
right.
maybe don't have access to
you know, sort of the bigger, larger systems and capital.
Right. And mind you, I was buying like milk from the grocery store in regular jugs that like were already like fine for public consumption. So that fear is definitely, it's there, it's ingrained, it's hard to get over because it's irrational in a way.
And especially with yogurt, because the longer it's out, the more lactic acid it produces and the lower the pH goes, which makes it actually safer.
Exactly. But like, you know, the whole point is like that was the way people preserved their milk because you could go for like, you know, days or weeks or even months in the caravan and nothing would happen to your milk. It would just be preserved.
So I have so much I want to get to, so I'm going to speed you a little through the story because we could talk for probably like 6 hours about it, but I know that you fought. I know that the lawyer in you and the sixth grader in you who was like, I want to be in that AP class. You were like, no, this is not happening. And you took it pretty far, and it was like 2 years of a battle, and then you lost.
I gave up.
You gave up.
Yeah.
And then you decided to come to New York, which is, I think, a really nice New York story.
Like, it is a nice New York
story.
Go
New York for being a little bit more thoughtful about these things. So your first batch was produced here in
2013.
I think I had it.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you did.
Yeah. and how did that feel?
Like a miracle.
Yeah.
I knew Betsy Devine, who runs Salvatore Brooklyn Ricotta, which is the best ricotta on the planet.
Hands down.
And she gave me like the best advice. She was like, you need to just stop fighting this and you need to just be in business. And I was like, okay, like here's this really badass chick telling me like what to do. And I like took a lot of courage from that. And I remember I couldn't even fill up her little vat with yogurt to make it, but I made that first batch. It was
Did you bring your dad with you?
I brought my dad, my mom, and my sister because we were like, this is closure. This is going to be the last hurrah. We'll make yogurt somewhere. And it'll be like, it's weird to think like we're going to do the last hurrah in New York, but I thought it was going to be like the last hurrah. And so we all came out, we made the yogurt here.
Why did you think it was going to be the last hurrah? Did you think no one was going to buy it?
Because the rules in New York are actually the same as they are in California.
Got it.
And
you just figured you'd get a call from the FDA.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know if I want to fight it. So before I do this like law job in California, let me get this out of my system somewhere.
Okay.
And the thing about New York is that, like, Brooklyn really is a food town.
Yeah.
And the rules are exactly the same, but the attitude is not, I'm going to shut you down because you're a pain in the ass. The attitude is, all right, walk me through this.
Yeah.
You're total pain in the ass, but let's see how we can make this happen.
Well, because we're New Yorkers.
Totally.
We like pain in the asses.
Totally. Yeah. And you recognize that it does generate income and it does generate a community.
Yeah.
And it does generate a reputation, you know, like... Brooklyn doesn't have a reputation for being a food town for nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back and talk about all of the business stuff.
Let's do it.
Awesome.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. Featuring a variety of interactive displays, MOFAD encourages eaters of all ages to be curious about food. The museum currently operates MOFAD Lab, a 5,000-square-foot experimental space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where Chow, making the Chinese-American restaurant, is currently on show until the end of March 2019. This exhibition celebrates the birth and evolution of Chinese-American restaurants, tracing their nearly 170-year history, and sparking conversations about food culture, immigration, and what it means to be American. It highlights the evolution timeline of Chinese-American restaurant menus, dating back to 1910, and also highlights a tasting section where participants get to enjoy tastings created by the country's most talented chefs who specialize in Chinese-American cuisine. Make sure you check out Chow while you still can. The exhibition closes at the end of March 2019. Check out MOFAD's tastings and extensive event calendar at mofad.org/events.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Andrew Friedman, and I'm the host of Andrew Talks to Chefs here on HRN. Every week, I interview a diverse cross-section of the best and biggest names in professional cooking. Give a listen and get to know all about the inner lives of chefs. You can find Andrew Talks to Chefs wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, I'm back with Homa Dashtaki, founder of White Mustache Yogurt. And so I want to talk about the business because you have a different approach than many founders. And you do have this incredibly special product. But I want to ask you a little bit about the packaging first. You've been in glass forever. It's in these like, I don't know. Even the hand feel of the jar is special. And the little white script and the mustache, did it, I know it didn't look like that at the beginning at the farmers markets, but like once you started going into stores, is that what it looked like?
Right. So, no. It the very, very first logo that we ever like started off with, I made in a Word document. And I drew like one half of the mustache with like the curves thing, and then I like copied, pasted, and flipped the mirror image, and that was the mustache.
Right,
and the font was like Times New Roman. Right.
Someone, if you're listening, look up the RX Bar original logo. Also, look up the Apple computer original logo. They're nobody started exactly where they finish. Like no one nails it right off at the you know beginning.
Yeah.
So when you but the glass jars and the little black rubber cap.
Yeah.
And
those all of that just kind of evolved. Like this is probably our fourth jar that we've been in.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm. And we the one after the mayonnaise jar was like a little tiny honey pot. Mm-hmm. And after the honey pot, we went to like a more square one again that just like totally flopped. Oh. And then we found this one that's kind of like a quintessential typical, like it feels like a yogurt cup. And there's been what's really interesting is now we've gotten so much feedback on this jar that we're thinking about, okay, how does this evolve? And I have to come up against that like problem. Like, do you mess with something or do you just leave it?
Yeah.
And, you know, should we go to a smaller size? Like right now it's a little 8 ounces. It's a little heavy. It's hard to transport.
Yeah. Well, those are the questions that come up. And so, you know, transitioning into, you know, I'm sure that the minute that a private equity dude tasted your yogurt in 2013, people have probably been knocking on your door for a few years. My guess is that everyone has an idea for you and wants you to scale. And if you take outside investment, we can help you with production and distribution and we can lower your costs and all of that. And I think the thing about you is that you seem to be very committed to the idea of authenticity and the idea of like microeconomies and not sort of mass industrializing this product. What I really wonder about is how does that work when it's, you know, when it comes to growing
and being sustainable
and sustainability and your, I mean, you know me, I'm a slow money kind of gal, but that doesn't mean that we can sort of stay still. And it also means that you are personally involved with making the actual yogurt, which is arguably not, you know, a long-term endeavor for you forever.
Or the best use of my time, ironically.
Like,
all I want to do is be in there putting sour cherries in the bottom of the jar.
Right. But it's like you need to manage people.
Yeah. and like, that's the easiest thing to delegate. And this is my biggest challenge is growing and scaling and resisting that.
I'm on your Instagram. People are begging you for it. I watch people like, I'm in Philly, please. And you're like, no, sorry. Like you literally are like,
I'm like now off.
Instagram. You're like, I love your city, but I'm not going there now. Like it's, I'm like,
oh God.
You know, I mean, people would kill for that. You probably don't even spend any money marketing.
No, we don't have a marketing. We don't have, like people will come and visit us and they're like, there's no office. I'm like, no, there's no office. Like my most important, like admin person is like the production manager.
Yeah.
Like you know?
And I mean, I was in here talking about trade spend.
I don't even really know what that is
yeah. because you don't ever have to go on promotion or do right. demos.
I mean, I feel like we do demos like in stores, but right. I don't think that's what you're talking about. And I feel really spoiled to like even
No,
admit
don't
that.
Be spoiled. You right. have an incredible product.
And we, you know, we've stubbornly decided to focus on it. So mm-hmm. any expense I'll make will be to make production more manageable for my team. But how that looks like as what my stash grows, like I've said it to everyone who has knocked on our door, and I've said it to my parents, and I've said it to my husband, who's like, we need some more money. And I'm like, yeah, I bet that would be nice. Is that I can't do it alone. Like, as a founder, I don't have a vision of what growth will look like. I have a vision of what growth won't look like.
Right. And
which is mass producing.
Right. You don't want a centralized place in the middle of
right.
the country.
Or, that's and like, producing like Idaho, their yogurt. You right. know, I don't want to do that. And I've held my own business kind of hostage to growth because of the whey. So whey is a byproduct right. of the yogurt making process. I have sunk all of my extra time and all of my extra resources in finding a market for the whey because I see White Mustache's existence as a miracle. Yeah. And I do see it being born out of so much advocacy effort and being shut down in California and our legal right. battles and like just being able to survive here in New York is all a miracle. And so I want to focus on the way.
Because it feels like a contradiction to have a waste product.
And a waste product that's just liquid yogurt. Like, just because right. people don't understand it does not mean it's not awesome.
Yeah.
And that I can't figure out a way to access it. But, you know, that's kind of been a really dumb business move because the yogurt, which does sell well and could get us more resources yep. to help me move the way, I'm not focusing on growing. Like, we capped our own production in 2014.
Right.
And this is crazy. Yeah. So we make 10 batches of yogurt a week, and that's like it.
Wow.
And we have a wait list of 51 stores that want our yogurt. And we say like, no.
I know. I snuck in there somehow.
Yeah.
But, and you keep saying no because you don't want to produce more whey and right. have it be wasted.
Right. So then I'll produce more yogurt to have more whey on our hands. And it's like, what is my end goal? You know, like, at what point is it enough? At what point is it not enough? So in 2014, right. we were like, this is enough for now.
Okay.
And like, my team has stagnated and has kind of been bored. And I'm just like, you kind of have these other challenges that you have to grow into. And so my challenge now is to treat the whey as a whole different project than the yogurt.
Yeah.
And to now, like, that has opened up my thinking on how to grow the yogurt separately
yeah.
and to be open to conversations with people who have ideas on the way.
There are yeah. people. I mean, Anne from Misfit. I feel mm-hmm. like if I haven't put you in touch yet, I need to because mm-hmm. they're looking for byproducts of food production and figuring out what they can do with it. Literally. Yeah. So we're going to connect you guys.
Yeah, I would love to talk with them. Yeah.
But tell me about Eataly, because Eataly in LA. Oh,
Eataly, yes.
I mean, that's you grew.
Yeah, we grew. And it was one of these very serendipitous, organic, blissful partnerships that you like dream about. So we sell Eataly here to Eataly in Flatiron.
Yes.
And in the World Trade Center. And they approached me and they said, will you come and make yogurt in California? And I was like, well, we were just kicked out of California. Right. So I don't know if that's going to happen. And
you didn't have Eataly behind you.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was also like, I don't have the bandwidth right now to go to LA and set anything up.
I remember when you were living out there, it was a little intense.
It was like yeah. we were couch surfing and we, you know, like I dragged my husband out there because I was like, I need someone to help me. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't know what the finances would look like on there, but it was one of those opportunities where, with the backing of this company that really gets slow, inefficiently handmade foods, yeah. like their pastas and their breads yeah. and their mozzarella, like they got what we did, and you just have to do it.
And so you built a yogurt making...
They did. They built a clean room to wow. like our specifications to be like, okay, like this is what, this is like, the amount of space White Mustache will need to make yogurt for the store. Wow. And it's been so awesome because, first of all, the California market is different, but I get to use California milk and California peaches, and like it's so great.
And the nice thing about growing, I mean, we talk about it a little bit. I think you and I are cut from a similar cloth in the sense that we see this sort of direct competition between growth and authenticity. And we're both a little bit freaked out that that growing will make us inauthentic somehow. But the other thing about growth is you can hire more people and you can pay people better and you can actually create more change. And that's good.
Right.
And so you have a team now in California that wouldn't have existed if you had not taken that opportunity.
Right. Which has taught me how to delegate. Like, I felt like it was inauthentic the minute I stepped out of the production room, you know? And it's like, that's like the mentality that I have to kind of fight against. And now recognize that my team is better than me.
Yeah.
And that's the way I want it,
that's
you know?
That's awesome. So, I mean, is that a potential... Could you just replicate that in all... Like, can you kind of be...
No, I'm going to have to ask Italy.
Yeah, I think... We'll talk to Italy about it. So I do want to talk about product lines, because I know that you were trying to... First, you were trying to sell the whey as just a drink to drink. Mm-hmm. Then you made these delicious pops with it, which I love.
Thank you.
Are you feeling like they are... catching on? Are you feeling like it all is working together? Do you want to, you know, for me, I'm thinking that's a beverage buyer, that's a frozen buyer, and that's a dairy buyer. But you don't think necessarily that way because
it's all yogurt to me.
Yeah.
And that's the way I approached it. And it's wrong because it's the way you're saying it is. And it's not, and you're talking about the dairy buyer, the drink buyer who's buying it to put it in the store, but the customer is also different. So the person buying my yogurt is not the person buying my drinks, is not the person buying my pops, unless you're like, you know...
Oh, I want to really support this entire ecosystem.
Right, which, you know, like not everybody knows about us or everything. You know, that's not how people actually make like all of
consumer decisions.
Totally. And so I never wanted to get in the drink business. I never wanted to get in the frozen popsicle business. I just couldn't convince anyone else to do it because whey was too foreign. And I was holding my own business hostage to growing. And so I was like, I will find an outlet for this in this way, in that way. And I think that it's all lost me money and a lot of it. And it's lost me time. And it's kind of made me feel and sound a little bit like a crazy person, like, by the way, you know, like, all this is so delicious. And I just like, it's been too heavy handed and like, I'm trying too hard, you know, when you have to try too hard to sell something, it doesn't make sense. And it's because I didn't understand the difference between dairy and drink.
Why would you?
And I'm just a yogurt. I mean, I'm lucky I even understood the yogurt
market. By the way, I don't even think you fully need to at this point because you have been sought after. So you don't have to go make a presentation to a dairy buyer and tell him who you belong next to and why he should move people out of the set and why you're going to be incremental dollars to his category. You don't have to do any of that. So, you know, unlike me, right, who does. So in a way, you've sort of been able to keep this very authentic kind of cottage industry product. You've gotten to super accounts where you've gotten really high profile, you know, stores, and you command a pretty nice price point for it. I would imagine that works, but it's just figuring out sort of, you know, the next steps, unless you decide you don't want there to be next steps, but it sounds like you kind of do. I think your dad does.
My dad has always been like, let's mechanize the whole thing. And like, you know, he's just whole thing is like crazy. I feel like I still don't want it to grow. I feel like it has to.
Yeah.
I feel like it definitely has to, or I'm going to lose my team or I'm going to lose.
Well, that's how, I mean, that's how I started the sauces at Havens to begin with. I needed an outlet because the thing is I had heard for years people say, if you're not growing, you're dying. And I was like, that's not true. You can have, you know, but it is. It actually is because life gets more expensive, healthcare gets more expensive, rent gets more expensive, labor, all of it. And not only that, but people want to learn and grow. And if you're not giving them opportunities to do that, they leave.
Or, you know, even if they're content, like, it's kind of your job as the manager to challenge them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I've challenged my team with, like, come up with more whey flavors or drink flavors, or let's try to meet these orders. But I've connected everything too much.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of creating a new product line, I have to do what we're good at
right
first.
So are you going to start to open up production a little bit for those 30 stores on the wait list?
I think because we've seen a little bit of motion with the whey, we can open it up. So right, we're looking to, and the way we're opening it up, and this is going to sound very obnoxious, is like providing all the stores we're at with all the flavors, because now they don't even get all the flavors.
Yes.
And so we're trying to meet the demand that we currently have and then, you know, kind of not take for granted people's interest in us and you know, value and appreciate that.
And that woman in Philly who's like crying because you said no to her. She might finally be able to get your yogurt.
We have no plans of selling outside of Manhattan or Brooklyn.
Right. So. Just to be clear.
Just to be clear.
So. Until Italy opens and
Philly. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then they can take care of it. So, question.
Mm-hmm.
Fundamentally,
mm-hmm.
do you think that something authentic can scale?
I think my instinct and my gut reaction is no. And I think it can... It just depends on what you mean by scale. I think if it's, when I hear scale, I hear mass produce.
Yeah.
And so that to me, like I know that if we're going to grow, we can only continue to make 5-gallon batches. And the way we would grow
is lots of
is
five
to make
gallon
many,
batches.
Many 5-gallon batches. Yep. So in that, like, if that means scaling, then I think that we can do that.
Yeah. I think there are two, I mean, there are different ways to, you know, make the strain, the yogurt.
Strain the yogurt. Yeah.
I don't want to bring a cat into this just because it didn't
it's
feel
not
appropriate.
Hygienic.
What's the biggest stressor for you right now?
Growth.
Yeah. Figuring this out. Yeah. And what's the most fun you've had? Like, what's one day or one moment where you're like, this is amazing. I feel just like the me that I've wanted to feel.
I think it's when I get to go in the production room with my team.
Yeah.
And I just have to be better at like making that a structured thing. Like
yeah.
every Tuesday.
Yep.
I get to go in, but like now really I just steal pockets of time and I go in and I'm like, yeah, so that would
what's your favorite flavor?
Dates.
Mine too.
I know.
That's just, so funny.
Yeah. And that flavor feels like cheating to me because it's like only smashed up dates and then milk. And I'm like, that's it.
I don't know. People love the sour cherry, but I like the way the sour cherry like makes that like juice that kind of flows in, but I'm the date gal.
Yeah, I'm the date gal too.
Do you have any books that you would recommend that you have ever read or enjoyed?
Yeah, I don't remember the name of it. I'm sorry, but there is a book on failure that talks about how every success in like history is actually
several failures
that needed to happen. Like if like they hadn't lost the Battle of Carthage, they would not have won some other like war.
Right.
And so I forget the name of this book.
I'll find
it. I'm sorry.
No,
but, like,
I'll find it by the time I tag the episode.
Yeah, that was great.
And then advice to founders. I mean, the people we talked about, the audience that's listening to this, you are a self-selecting crew out there. But they need some support.
I would say like, put your head down and really focus on your product.
Yeah.
I think it's so hard to get wrapped up, especially in competition.
Yep.
And like, I hear a lot of people like who start out and they're like, but so-and-so does it this way. And how does so-and-so do it that way? And I was like, but how do you do it?
Yeah.
Like, just put your head down and like focus on your product. And like, if it doesn't work out, that's fine.
But I honestly think like, I think I've said this before, but I don't believe there is such a thing as competition.
Right.
You know? Because, like, everything has its own energy. And you could have two identical chairs that look exactly the same, but something feels different when you sit in them.
I agree.
You know?
I agree. And I do think there's room for everybody.
For sure.
And, Yeah, and I think like worrying about competition is just the way of sabotaging yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. That's a good one. We have a listener question. Someone who wrote in on my DMs.
Oh no, it's the person from Philly.
Yeah, she was like,
I'm so sorry.
She's like stalking you.
I'll just drive out there.
She's lovely. What's the most creative thing you've seen done with the used jars? Has anyone ever sent you like pictures of their jars or have, yes?
Yes, there's a firefighters association in Red Hook that has a windowsill full of cactus plants.
Wow, yeah. In the white mustache jars. Mm-hmm. That's white mustache awesome. Jars,
yeah.
Good question.
That's a great question.
Good answer. Yeah.
Wow. All
right. Homa, I love talking to you.
Thank
I always
you so
feel
much.
Like I don't know, saner or something. Good. I don't know. I loved having you on here. Thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
And for all you In the Sauce listeners out there, thank you for continuing to listen and for telling people to listen. It's really fun getting all of your Instagram questions and just seeing the numbers grow. We are going to be hosting a panel at Haven's Kitchen on April 1st about these things, primarily financial and money. And yes, there will be some discussion of when to raise money and how. And, you know, I think especially as a female founder, these questions can be a little bit dicey. So there'll be more on that, but certainly go to the Haven's Kitchen Instagram or website for more information. The invite will be up soon. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.